My name's Tom, and I'm an addict. Since May 15th, 1983. And I always like to say that God chose that clean day, not me, because I didn't know any better. I was sort of getting ready, but, you know, he had some other plans for me. But I don't know. I have so much stuff here. You know, I got up this morning, you know. I probably won't use any of that. Got up this morning, and I can't believe they don't wear them doors up there. It's all like, boom, 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 boom. That's that God trying to wear me down.
You know, here I go.
So they don't have no part in it, you know, because it always wants to rise up and tell you how good he is, you know. But there is good in me, but it's like it's a gift from God, you know. Like I was sitting there thinking, like, how wonderful was God held off all the rain this weekend and stuff like that.
That's where it gets
me. But I think he's maybe bringing on the healing rain if you just pay attention, you know. Because we all need a little healing rain in our lives once in a while. I know I do. Because I got up this morning, you know, I listened to some music, and right away, man, the tears show up, you know. And I used to not like this, like tears. But I really enjoy them now because they, like, cleanse my soul. Because my mind and body, they worry so much. And, you know, they just doesn't know how to, like, really enjoy life as good as it should. So he lets it, like, he, like, fills my heart up. It's like a balloon. You know what I mean? When I first got clean, I had, like, this little itty-bitty heart. And the longer I stay clean, that heart just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And I'm like, how big is this going to get, you know? And that's what I'm talking about. Like, in our 12th step, I don't know if you realize it or not, but, you know, because a lot of times we hear about the steps, we read them, we, you know, people hear people discuss them, and sponsors trying to tell you how to, like, decipher them and all that stuff. But there is mentioned the word joy in there, J-O-Y. More than once. Isn't that a wonderful word, joy? You know what I mean? And they put it, and God saves it for the last, you know, because we need to have some joy in our lives in here, because recovery is not a miserable experience. It's a coming to life, you know? And I've seen many, many people come to life. I've seen God take the most ornery cuss you'd ever want to meet and turn him into a soft little teddy bear and use him and pour his heart out for people and make himself vulnerable for you guys. And sometimes you don't even know. You know what I mean? One of the last things God gave me was, like, not the desire, in the 12th step, it's not the desire of the visible things, but the desire of the secret things. The things that nobody knows that you're doing. Because you don't want to cash in. Like, sometimes I hear people, like, they're telling everybody, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and it's just like cash it in, ching, ching, at Walmart, you know? I don't want to cash my chips in. You know, I want to store my treasure up for somewhere else, you know? And it's the most wonderful thing to do that, you know, because I know there's people here that have done so many things that nobody even knows about, you know? But yet we don't look like it sometimes. You know, God takes the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, you know? So I'm going to get into the notes. When I was researching the 12th step, and I love to research the steps. I have researched the steps for the steps they were written on and formulated. And I sat in the room where they were actually formulated, and all the coffee was sucked up, and poor Ann Smith was put up with us. She used to wake up 6:30 in the morning and pray at her house. The whole fellowship. And they would wait, and they'd write it down, man. That's how they got it, you know. But one of the things that they did, and this is, you can't work the 12th without the 11th. So you cannot work the 12th without the 11th, because that's where the instructions come. That's where I'm ready. I'm preparing myself. I got the armor on, you know. I'm paying attention. I might even have taken some notes. But one of the things they did is they used to practice the presence of God in their lives. You know what I mean? Make him real. The God of your understanding needs to be real in your life, because you need to be that, you need that guidance and that leading into your life. Otherwise, you'll just be like a blind man walking around in the woods, falling off cliffs and stuff like that. And you don't want to be led by a blind guy. I know I didn't. I've been led by a few blind guys, you know, and we all fell off the cliff together, you know. Did you ever see that movie Ice Age where all the dodos jump off the cliff? Well, watch that movie, man. You gotta watch them kids' movies, because we're all kids at heart, you know. And my grandson, he calls that Rice Rage. And he said, we were on vacation. He says, I want to watch Rice Rage, Rice Rage. You know what I mean? I said, Rice Rage? What is that? And then my wife says, he wants to watch Ice Age, Tom. Because there's this little squirrel there that's so determined to save every little acorn he ever finds, you know? And I was like that too, man. I was like, but because he wanted to save the acorn, he like started the Ice Age. He created Mount Rushmore. And he almost like wiped out the entire, he wiped out all the dinosaurs too, I think, in the process. And I had stuff like that happen in my life. I was kicking a very destructive force in that self-will area. Because that's, it's like the 12th step is like stepping aside from self and letting God kind of like use you as his puppet. Or not puppet, instrument. Because our book talks about instrument. An instrument of his will. You know what I'm saying? I love to be an instrument of my God's will because it makes me feel the way he feels. I heard this story. It was a song. I like to listen to spiritual music. There was this one guy. He says he gave up his heart because he was seeking after God's heart. So God gave him his heart. So he knew he could feel the way God feels sometimes. I know we get that in NA because I've seen people, like, they can be real ornery, and then the next minute they're over there hugging people, saying, I love you. You know what I mean? Because we have that, like, weirdness going on in us, you know, the battle, you know. But it's funny how love always wins. Love is stronger than any of that anger or low self-esteem and stuff like that. It always rises up to bless somebody else, you know? And one of the things that I as I was reading this book, was like, God says to put my awakened spirit to work, the good youth. See, I had a sleeping spirit. It was asleep for a long time. It would kind of wake up once in a while and say, nah, maybe tomorrow, you know. But once it woke up, it's really woke up. I'll tell you what, in the last 7 years, God has had me on like a real spiritual journey, okay? And it has not stopped. It has not lightened up because a lot of times I used to think that, like, you get this for a little while and then it fizzles out. But I'm telling you, if you really work at this, it gets brighter and brighter and brighter. You know, you get to see things in a different way. You get to feel, you'll start crying at the weirdest moments. You know what I mean? You'll start to see prosperity show up in your life. You'll start to see people like want to hang out with you and stuff like that because they want to know what you got. And sometimes when they find out what you got, they run the other way. But that's okay because I used to run too. I remember, I'll tell you a story. When somebody tried to bring me a message, a powerful message like this, I spit in their face one time. You know what I mean? That's how mean and nasty I was. I don't know if there was a heart in there. It was just empty and cold, you know. But I changed. See, that's what this program's all about, is change. See, I don't have to live like that anymore. And the 12th step shows me a way to continually live this way. You know what I mean? To be an expression of the love that my higher power has for other people. You know what I'm saying? He wants to express that so desperately. And as I was praying about this last week, God says, I have to let God out of the box of my heart. He wants to live. And he can only live through us. We're his only means. Otherwise, he's just words on a page. He's a theory. But when we see him living and walking around here, and we see a person that used to be, like we used to know when they were using, they come in here, man. And they're like planting a baby on their knee, you know what I'm saying? Picking up cigarette butts. You know, I've picked up a million cigarette butts and I've never smoked a cigarette. And that upsets me a little bit, but I should at least start it smoking, man. That way I can have somebody else throw it. But I guess because I eat a lot, I throw like candy wrappers and stuff. Every once in a while, I'm leaving that coffee cup behind, you know? But that's okay. One of the things is that you have to find the sweet spot of God's will. Have you ever found it, the sweet spot of God's will? It's just a wonderful place because no matter what you do, it just seems to be a wonderful place. Everybody's just like, the right words come out. You know what I'm saying? And that really comes as a result of the previous steps, which I work the maintenance steps, 9, 10, and 11. See, in 11, I seek God's will. And if I got something wrong with my life, he goes, you know, Tom, you need to go back and clean your house. You know, you need to make this right. You need to make amends. Then come back to me and then, you know, and let's talk. And I really love that time because I get back, I clean my life up. I get back to the God of my understanding. And he doesn't say really anything to me at that point. I'm just like at peace with it. I love being at peace with God. I hate having that turmoil. And I know that's from the making mistakes in my own life, you know. But once I had that, every once in a while, God will say, get up. You know? See, one thing that I've learned in NA is God tells us to get up. You know what I mean? We don't have to sit. We don't have to kneel forever, but He's going to tell us to get up, and He's going to put us into work. And we will develop abilities and talents that we didn't have, we didn't even know we had. You can become a tremendous speaker. You can become an incredible businessman. You know what I'm saying? You can become the father you always wanted to be, or the wife that you always wanted to be. You can become all those things. A lot of times people look at careers as the only place of growth, you know? Like one of the things that God gave me says, if you ain't growing, you might be going. You know what I mean? We used to say, if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. But I'm telling you, you have must grow. Because most people that are depressed and lonely and isolated, they are not growing. Or they didn't go to school. They didn't read anything. You should do at least something every day to make yourself feel better about yourself. And a lot of times, in the beginning, that's just like getting out of bed at a decent hour. You know what I mean? Going to the meeting early and helping setting it up. You know, because I've been to meetings where everybody, there's 100 people and they run out the door and all the tables are sitting there and some guy with no legs is taking down them tables and chairs. No legs. But he's there every week. So those are my heroes in NA. I have heroes in NA. Inspirations. Because it says in our book that that people will inspire us to stay clean. Inspired. We need inspiration, you know. One of the other things he gave me is you can't give away what you don't have. And if you're not spending any time on your knees and studying, it's pretty hard to get it. You know what I'm saying? Because in NA, we're God's UPS service here. And you know what? And I got to get the package. You know, there's not like waiting at the dock and no package shows up. You know, I need to get the package. Because when I first started the 11th step, I was so selfish. Everything that God would give me, I thought was for me. I'm like, man, what does this mean? What does this mean? And then I started to share it with people. Because once God gives you something, go out and share it with people, man. And you'll hear like 5 or 6 people like, man, that's exactly what I needed to hear. That's the answer I needed to hear. Thank you. Thank you. You know what I mean? And you're sitting like, well, what did I do? You know, that was for me. What are you talking about? But you only keep what you have by giving it away. Because then God delivers my package to me. And sometimes it's, like, it shows up through a source that I never would think it was possible, like my wife and my kids. Your children will humble you. You know what I'm saying? God will take your boss and humble you. He'll take traffic and humble you because He loves humility. He's attracted to the humble. Absolutely loves them. Because it's really easy to love God when you're humble, because I can become like that little child He wanted me to be. I can climb up in His lap, you know. I could be that lamb. I can be that. I really can. I enjoy it. I was just going through a little bit earlier. I could be the lamb. And I enjoy that. It's part of the blessing of this program, you know. But after we get something to give away, we need to sow seeds into the lives of others. See, you got to understand, like, the 12th step is about reaping and sowing, you know. Like, a lot of people only sow into their own lives. They go out and earn money, and they got a little fenced in little property, and they're trying to grow as much corn as they can on that little 1 acre, you know what I mean? The neighbor, he may not have hardly any seed, and it might be barren, but you know, like you walk over there and you throw some seed over there, he don't even know about it. Later on in a year, he got a crop that he didn't sow. And we can bless other people's in a lot of ways, you know what I'm saying? Don't sow just into your own life. Don't expect God just to give you everything. It's meant to be given away. That's what the 12 steps showed me. I said, until I start giving up some money once in a while, so I started like putting myself out there. I call it putting myself in play, you know, because there was a time I didn't want to like let people know who I was in NA, because I was afraid of you people, man. I was afraid you were going to hurt me. And you know what? A lot of people did hurt me in the beginning. You know, I couldn't handle rejection, and I was a Christian man in here, and some people just hated my God. And I was like, well, I'm not going to talk about Him ever again, never, nuh-uh. But I'm not that person anymore. I don't sit here and you know, and pound my fist and something like that, but I'm not afraid, because this book has given me the right to the God of my understanding, the absolute right, and without any strings attached. None. He cut them a long time ago, and that goes for you. You're entitled to yours too, and I honor that and respect you. That's what sowing is. You know what I mean? You sow your your experiences in my life, I sow them into yours, and hopefully you come away better people, you know? Because we're all looking to grow and change, and we never know where that's going to lead us, you know? And here's really an important thing that ties into this. At some point in the 12th step, you have to come to the point where you like what God has done to you. I mean, love it. You have to love yourself in here. You'll start to love yourself. I remember there are times when I'm driving around in my car and I get so emotional and I literally feel something going on inside of me and I start to cry and I say, God, what are you doing to me? What are you doing to me? I can't stand it. And it's not that I don't want to stand it. It's more like, it's too much. You're just doing too much to me. It's too good. And our book says he doesn't force his goodness on. I have to open myself up to it. And he just pours it into me. You can't contain it. It just overflows into the lives of other people and into my children and stuff like that. I get tolerance, you know. I love tolerance because I need a lot of it. Because I'm a salesman, you know. And the customers are nuts. Everybody is mad at the salesman, but these customers are nuts, man. I'm telling you. I don't know why they don't see that, you know, but it is, you know. But start to love yourself. And if you will love yourself, if you put these steps into practice, because it's impossible. If you're hitting your knees in the morning, you're seeking God's will, he will reveal it to you. Most cases it's on an as need to know basis. You'll be at a meeting and you'll see that little kid standing over in the corner. I always tell my sponsors the one smoke roll that'll come out of that meeting, smoke out one cigarette. If nobody comes up to them, they will shoot that cigarette down on the ground and head down the road and you may not ever see him again. So remember that when you see that guy off to the side smoking that cigarette and it starts getting lower and you're over there with your buddies. I've missed it too. Believe me. That's how I learned that. When I saw that lost soul walk away. And that might have been our only chance to tell them that we loved them, that there was another way, you know. Because a lot of times, it's the personal touch that matters. See, I have to sow into another person's life. I have to touch him inside. He's vulnerable. He doesn't look like it. He's not telling you, but he really is. He's just like we were when we got here. You know, help me. I'm afraid. I don't know what to do. I've lost so much, I don't know how much more I can lose. I don't know how far I can make it, you know. That's why we have to take the opportunities to reach into another person's life as quickly as possible. Be sensitive. Practice the presence of God. He'll make you sensitive. Because he's sensitive. He's extremely sensitive. Here's another concept. God gave me a lot of concepts here for the 12th step. Make your hands and knees available to people. And I know some of you are looking at me like, well, what does that mean? Do you know, when I got here, we used to kneel down with you, and we would take your hands and pray with you. You're allowed to do that. And I do that with my sponsees, and I'm seeing them pass it on. You know what I mean? It's like, sometimes people, that just freaks them out, man. You know, it takes humility to pray. It takes humility to ask somebody, do you want me to pray for you? It takes humility to say, will you pray for me? Because I want to, you know, a lot of times I don't want anybody to know that I'm hurting or anything, that I don't need any help. I'll go it alone. You know what I mean? But God said, I remember my good friend Tammy, I have Hep C, and I just started. She says, you need to have the pastor pray for her. And I'm like, oh, no. I can go it all alone. I was insane. I'll tell you what, I stand up here, I'll ask you right now, pray for me. Because I need it. Because some days this stuff makes you nuts. You know what I'm saying? But what's really weird about this Hep C is this medication is you might be a little bit wacky in your brain, but in your spirit, you got this soundness, man. It's drawn me closer to God in a way I never thought was possible. It's really weird. God takes like things, all these things in life, and he turns it around and teaches you from it and make you stronger, develop character. You know what I mean? When I got here, I had no character at all. I didn't even have a personality. I was just like a chameleon. You just jump on a wall, I'll be whatever you want to be. And sometimes I wouldn't be anybody. You know what I mean? That was really my problem I got. I wouldn't be anybody. I wanted to hide in the corner in the back of the room and just like hear stuff. And I'd just stand out front of the meeting. Again, I didn't smoke, so nobody knew about the one smoke roll with me, you know. But I kept coming back, you know. God changed me, you know. I used to be very timid. And there's a lot of timid people in here. And there's a lot of people that are living that false self. You know what I mean? The mask. See, in NA today, I only have to have one personality, and that's Tom. I'm entitled to be me. And you may not like me, but that's tough. There's only one me, and God told me it's okay to be me. You know what I mean? It's okay to be you. That's what the beauty of this thing is. Like, you know what I mean? If you're like a really troubled individual, that's okay. You know, that's how we work through all that stuff, through honesty and openness with people. You know, it's amazing. But make your hands and knees available to people. Don't be afraid. The first time you do it, it'll freak you out. But man, is it a powerful experience. You know what I mean? I'll tell you what, I've done third steps with people, man. We leave the room, we're just like, our eyes are open, and it's like, whoa, what was that, you know? And I'm like, thank you, God, for the ability to experience like what you have for us again. See, my one shot at that did not have to end at that one shot. I am now like sown that seed, and I'm watching it grow in others, and it builds faith and hope in me that this program works, that it doesn't always lead down a negative path, that it leads to a positive source, a positive change in our lives, you know? So don't forget about that. That's important. That was an important note, because I thought that was beautiful. I thought that was beautiful. Absolutely beautiful, you know? I mean, can you picture yourself kneeling down? I mean, you know, we all, you can like have a little, like, I don't know, a little fantasy about that, you know? With your children. Pray with your children. I'll tell you, I'll share a powerful thing with you, man. It's intimate, you know. When my daughter got married, I was walking down the aisle with her, and I was praying, you know, because I never knew what that was like, and I got the honor, and I stayed clean long enough to take her down that aisle. I had earned that right to be her father. And I remember I was going down that aisle, and this is the prayer. It says, "This is my beloved daughter, in whom I am well pleased." See, that's prayer. And if I would have never said that prayer, I wouldn't have this moment. See, God allow. He'll store things in your heart for when the times get hard and your daughter gets crazy and she may not be the most lovable person, but He'll bring those memories to you. I remember one time I could not remember my mother and father loving, hugging me, and I prayed. I said, "Please, God, give me a memory," and He did. One was saying hello, and one was saying goodbye. There's plenty of room in your heart for a lot of good stuff. It'll expand. So the more you want to put there, the more room that God allowed. He doesn't mind it being surrounded by love in your heart. He doesn't mind it at all. Because there is a treasure to Him. Isn't that wonderful? The other day, this is reaping and sowing. I sponsor a really tough guy in NA, and I love him, man. I've loved him from the first time I ever saw him. There was a period that I didn't go to meetings, or I wasn't going regularly. I was a salesman out on the road, but this person would always say hello to me. He never turned his back on me, and he eventually, I remember I came back asking to be my sponsor. He says, I'm no good at that. And later on, 3 years later, he asked me to sponsor him. It was really weird. And I really love this guy. I really do. But you know why? You know why? You know why he loves me? Because I never judge him. I accept him just the way he is. And I think he never had anybody do that. It was amazing. But the other day, I went to a meeting up in Brookline, and he was speaking outside, and our meeting got done early, and I'm sitting in the little hallway there because there were so many people just surrounded him. And he was sharing from his heart and in a powerful way. And I was so proud of him. I remember thinking, he's become a real child of God. You know what I mean? He's carrying God's message now. It's not up in his head anymore. And people love him. He doesn't even know how many people love him. You know what I'm saying? I'm amazed. You know what I'm saying? I remember we sit down together and I said, you know, it took me 15 years to get here, to get to the point where I finally had some understanding. And he's like, me too. He saw me go through it and he went through it with me, you know. And it's okay to love your sponsees in that way. It's okay to be proud of them. I'm proud of the work my sponsees do. And I tell them. I always like remind them of what, man, I see this in you, and I see that in you. I also say, I saw that. I saw you do that. They don't like that, but you have to offset it, man. Sure, some, you know what, they have talents and ability. They're highly talented individuals, man. See, that's a 12th step. See, it doesn't stop, you know, once you work that step and move on. You got to keep building them up. It says, lest God build the house, the man labors in vain, man. I'll tell you what, I've built some pieces on my house that I built and watched them crumble around me. But the things that God builds in your life last an eternity. They really do. They are solid. And no matter what comes your way, deaths, whatever, injuries, illness, they will stand. You will stand, man, the test of time. That's an eternal foundation. That's what we build with these steps, eternal foundations, man. And always remember this, eternal gratitude. There are people around us right now, you don't even know they're here, but they're just like here in spirit. You know what I mean? And if you open your eyes to like the presence of God, you might feel it too sometimes. I remember the other day I was speaking up in the spiritual retreat, and I had a dream about it. There was this hill. I was sleeping in my car, and I didn't sleep too good, but I had this dream of all these people that I had used to see around here. They were all laying around in this field. And there was this one young boy, man, and he was just laying there, you know, like this. And he's not here anymore, but I really miss him. Because he was the first person that God brought to me in here. I remember I was standing in front of a meeting, and he goes, his aunt goes, he needs a sponsor. And I'm like, I said, okay. And I loved that kid. He was like one of my own kids, you know. That's what happens in my family. You become, real literally become part of my family. But, you know, you got to grow up just like my kids. So you got to get a job, you know. You got to go get an education. You know, I'll tell you that stuff. Like, what are you doing with your life? You know, grow. Don't stunt your growth in here, man. It won't do you any good. Here's another thing our book says. The message is meaningless unless we live it. I have to live this or else I'm a fraud. Do you ever feel like a fraud? Did you ever say something that you didn't do yet? You're like, well, that was a theory, you know. This is my theory on life, you know. And I read in a book, it says, a man with an argument has nothing on a man with an experience, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, anything I'm sharing with you, I have actually experienced it. So you come up and argue with me all you want, man. But it's too late. It's too late. Too late. I've already been there. I've been to the battle. I know what it's like. God put the strength in me, man. I don't have just the head knowledge, but I have the heart knowledge, man. So you can't take it from me. See, once it's in my heart, it's pretty hard to get it at. Because it's taking up a residence, man. And it's growing roots. And it actually grows more powerful. But you got to live it. That's what the 12 steps all about. I've learned a new way of life, and I'm going to put it into practice. And I'm going to sow seed into other people's lives, and I will keep going on the growing along spiritual lines, whatever that may be for you. You could be like me, stubborn. Everybody was this, everybody was that. I don't know. Our book talks about religion. You know, religion and spirituality are two different things, you know. And there's a lot of people that are involved in what we consider religions that are very spiritual people. But I robbed myself of a lot of that stuff for a lot of time because I was closed-minded because some nun beat me. Because some priest was, like, he was cheap or he was miserly. I used to hear that from adults. You know what I mean? Just because one person showed. I remember I went to this retreat up at the monastery, and I was sitting there like, you know, and it's a Catholic one. I'm like, you know, statues and stuff. You know what I mean? And God gave me an image in my mind of some little old lady just praying off into the side of this room. I don't even know why. And he goes, he showed me, he says, Tom, what did that little old lady ever do to you? You cannot condemn everybody for the sins of one person. Forgive them. And I did. And then later the next day, I got to see a bunch of old geezers sing Amazing Grace. And beautifully. You know what I mean? They're like, they get in like, like angels, man. Like angels. He lifts them up. I don't know. It's like, it's amazing, man. Don't be closed-minded in here, man, because God is leading. If God's leading, he's going to lead you somewhere. You know what I'm saying? Because I remember when I came to NA, I thought this is it. It's all I ever needed. But I needed other stuff. I needed an education. You know what I mean? I needed advice. I needed spiritual guidance. You know, the founders that wrote these steps, they had spiritual advisors, man. Because they knew they didn't have it, man. Bill Wilson called AA a spiritual kindergarten. That's a direct quote from kindergarten. So if you want to stay in kindergarten, or in other words, be one of those people, separate the men from the boys or the girls from the women. See, sixth step is a challenge to grow. You could stay in kindergarten if you want. But I'm not changing your diapers for very long. And other people get weary of it too. You know, did you ever see like a big kid with a big diaper on? Like, come on, dude. Get potty trained or something, you know? I have a grandson like that. He's just so stubborn, man. I think he's going to wear them until he's 40 years old. It says we ask to be used as a spiritual instrument, which takes humility. Surrender all to the God of your understanding. And this is the hard part. I have to surrender my marriage, my car, my money, my feet, my knees, my hands, my mind, everything. My job. Sometimes too much money isn't good for me. You know what I'm saying? I have to. That's part of the process. It all falls under His control. See, a lot of times we want to give our addiction to God. You know what I mean? But we don't understand how those things contaminate our lives sometimes. You know what I mean? And it's real important. Like, see, because like the 12th step, it sounds like all I'm doing is carrying that message. But it really says, we continue to practice these principles in all our affairs. Stop lying. It ain't going to work. It's a terrible thing to be a liar. And you know what? And it comes on you every once in a while. You tell one little, as soon as you tell one little lie, there's like a bazillion of them behind them, man. It's like, you got it. It's impossible to keep up with it, man. So it's better not to tell the first one. But you know what? What I know is like, just because people don't like the truth doesn't mean you stop telling them the truth. Because, you know, I have people that I speak honestly to and they don't always like it. And they get mad sometimes, you know. I'm not brutal about it, but, I don't know. I had an experience recently with my brother. You know, I had to tell him either since my mother died, he hasn't been very in my life very much at all. As a matter of fact, he hasn't been in my life very much at all since I was 14 years old. And I asked him, I said, you know, if you don't want to have a relationship with me, tell me now so I can give up hope because I want to get on with my life. See, God was like saying, look at Tom, sometimes you just have to let people go. And maybe that's the catalyst that changes my life. But, I'm going to wrap this up here. Share our experience, strength, and hope, which is it, like, you know, I don't have an argument, I have an experience. But in the end of it, remember the word joy. Since we find joy, I think joy is mentioned 3 or 4 times at the end of there. Joy is a wonderful word. I enjoy joy. I was listening to a song. It says, you give me joy that's unbeatable, unstoppable. See, God will give me joy, the joy of living. You know what I'm saying? And being happy. You know what I mean? You can't contain it. You want to tell somebody about it. It says, also be glad to be alive. It'll make you glad to be alive. It'll make you see the beauty in everything. It says, and we are a vision of hope. See? See, God is God and the words are the words, but you're the vision. You're the part I see. You're the part that the newcomer sees. If they see you acting out, they're going to act out. Because you can be a vision of destruction. You know what I'm saying? And we have to be, to whom much is given, much is required. You know what I mean? We're not perfect. We do not have to be perfect. But we have to weigh the cost. Okay? You know, because, you know, there's a lot of young people in here and they're watching us. They're watching me. Because the minute I stand up for a spiritual way, they want to see if it's real. They'll sit around for 3 or 4 years and wait for me to fall. You know what I'm saying? But that's okay. I got patience. I heard the other day this one guy, he was like mad at God. He says, if there is a God, I'll give him 5 minutes to strike me dead right now because I don't think he'll do it. And then 5 minutes passed and he was still alive and he went over to God and the guy says, one guy said to the other guy, he says, well, did you see that? You know, and he says, and one guy says, do you think you really can wear at the patience of an eternal God in 5 minutes? So God has not run out of patience with me yet. As a matter of fact, the most profound moment I had in recovery was when I was on my knees at 15 years clean begging God not to give up on me. And He never did. and he ain't giving up on anybody on here. As long as there's just a spark of like desire or hope in you. You know what I mean? It says, what's it say? A smoldering flame he will not extinguish. You know what I'm saying? He's not here to put our light out. He's not here to break a reed. He doesn't break the reed. He doesn't break us. He's here to gently pull us up, bring us back into fellowship with the people in here. They want to help you and lead you on the path. So that's all I have to say. I hope you got something out of it, and God bless you all.
All right. Next speaker here is from Johnstown Kiss Group. I know he has a powerful message because he happens to be my sponsor, you know. So he says he's not a morning person, but I know that you guys can get a lot from him. I get a lot from him every day, and I give to you that.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Matt, and I'm an addict.
And I consider anything I do for the program before 9 o'clock a 12-step call. But it's kind of neat. You know, I was thinking about this topic. You know, I really want to thank the committee for asking. This is a topic really, really up my alley.
You know, the thing about the 12-step, you know, our basic text says that the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. And I was thinking that, you know, from the first time I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, and in that case, oh, by the way, let me give you my clean date, just I have to get that out of the way. My clean date is December 13th, 1994. And I went into rehab December 16th, 1995. And that's where I first heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I went into rehab and I never seen the readings before. I never been to an NA meeting before. And you know, the thing is that, you know, what we read is, what is the Narcotics Anonymous message? It's a message of hope and a promise of freedom. And by the time, you know, that time for me in December 1990, I had enough. I had struggled with this disease for 14 years. I was a child addict. They didn't even invent them yet. You know, I OD'd 6 times in a hospital with a detox unit. I was too young to be an addict. You know, in the 1980s, there wasn't any, that didn't come till the 1990s. There was no adolescent units for addicts. There was no, you know, you just weren't an addict at that age. And what they would do to me is I would OD, and they'd take me to intensive care, and they would get all the drugs out of my system, and they would restore me back to life because I about killed myself. And then I'd promptly, as soon as the next available opportunity, go out and do it again. And really, you know, there wasn't an understanding, I don't think, at least in my town, what anything about addiction. So, but by the time I got to rehab, I was 25 years old. I was tired. I was beaten. I was craving for a message. You know what I mean? I needed, you know, at the end of my using, I tried everything. I tried everything. And by the time I got to rehab, you know, that, you know, when we read the 12th step, it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. Now, I had to have the opposite of that. Drugs took me to the point where my spirit was dead. I was suicidal. I got to the point where I couldn't even use with people anymore. I couldn't stand people. I was separated from humanity. I was hating myself. I was empty, you know. I was just beaten. And if I would have died, I would have been okay with that. You know? So I was down to nothing. See, in the therapeutic value of one addict helping another, see, the way I learned to carry the message today started in the beginning of my very first day clean, when somebody gave me a message to me. See, people don't realize the value that I place on the people early in my recovery. The people that showed me empathy, you know, not pity. I wanted pity. You know, I wanted you to say, you know, Matt, you are terrible. You're correct. You shouldn't even be here. I wanted that. I wanted everybody to verify what I thought of myself. You know, they didn't do that. See, the basic text gave, the program has this another word. It's called empathy. Seeking to understand through one's experience. See, I didn't realize that I wasn't the only person that got the addiction. It takes us, that's the end of the road. We read it in our readings. When we hit the end of the road, and we find that, you know, there's been all, you know, two alternatives. You know, I was at that end of that road, and there were people that came into my life that said, look, you know, and you know, it was even therapeutic for me, because when they shared their story, they even went further down the end of the road for themselves. But I was here, but now I'm here. I needed that. You don't know the value of what that did for me. You don't know how that restored the energy of life that was taken away by drugs. It put life back into me. I didn't understand it at the time. I didn't appreciate it at the time, but I responded. You see, because the people that cared enough for me, you know, I was one of those addicts that I was in and out and in and out and in and out. And people gave up hope on me. You know, the funny things about the rooms, you know, is you go out once, everybody's sympathetic. Keep doing it. And see how people act to you in the rooms. I did it. This is from personal experience. You know, but the people that cared regardless of what I was doing, regardless of how sick I was, the people that tried to carry a message to me left something with me. And that was the beginning of an awakening that one day I finally realized is, guess what? This is what I must give back. This is what I must do to carry this thing on. This is what I must do to renew my spiritual energy on a daily basis. You know, I've heard it stated that the 12 steps more of a maintenance step. It is. My energy, my spiritual energy goes. Life does that. Self-centeredness does that. Resentment does that. Envy does that. Any of my character defects, you know, going out and doing things for myself, working my own program, it'll kill me. What I need is I need to renew the energy. And the funny part about my experience is when I try to help another addict, it doesn't matter what point I am at in recovery, I get more energy than I give. That's my experience. That happened from the time I was in rehab. When I was in rehab, something happened. And believe it or not, sometimes the message doesn't necessarily come from other addicts in the rooms. When I was in rehab in December, over Christmas and New Year's. That was okay for me. I was very afraid of that stuff, you know, holidays. But on Christmas, the rehab gave us a steak dinner. Now, I'm not very heavy now. Take 60, 70 pounds off me. I gained 15 pounds in rehab. I didn't eat well. I didn't know how to live. I was reduced to the animal level. I was starting to get... They had steak. Steak for a bunch of junkies? That was touching to me. Also on Christmas, who carried the messages? There was some Amish folks who had nothing to do with drugs, nothing to do with recovery, took their time out of their Christmas to come to the rehab to put a play on for us bunch of sick drunks and addicts in this rehab. And that touched me. And from that point on, from that day on, I said that when a holiday comes around, I can't think of a better place to be for myself than in an institution with other addicts. Because you want to see some depressed people, go to a prison on Thanksgiving. Go to a prison on Christmas. You know, go to a rehab on Christmas. Anyhow, so I got the message. I got the gist of this 12th step from the very time I walked into the rooms. Hugs. I do not like to be hugged. I said, I remember my early saying about my impression in Narcotics Anonymous. My first impression is that I love this program. I love the people in it, but don't hug me. And at him and me, he would run over me and give me the biggest hug that he could. And eventually, you know, you can't fight City Hall. Eventually, I accepted that that's what we do. And that became, you know, I could be hugged today. I could hug other people today. I couldn't do that when I got here. That was a spiritual awakening for me that I could hide. I did not like it. I was afraid of it. I wanted space. You know, I had a lot of misinformation out there. You know, it was the honest sharing of other. I was always, as an addict, I wanted to control information. Who knew what? Who, what I was doing, where I was at, and this and that. I wanted to control all information. My environment from the time I picked up was unmanageable. I was out of control. I always wanted to control information, what you knew, who knew what, and I always tried to keep it in my mind, who knew what and what about what. You know? But see, the thing was, is I was afraid, and I wouldn't share at meetings the truth. I'd share, but it wouldn't be the truth. And when somebody else in the rooms honestly shared about something that I was going through, they made it safe for me. They made an environment of recovery where I could honestly share myself. So, you know, a lot of this stuff I learned in the first 30 days of recovery. I learned that, you know, if I listened and somebody said something, shared some pain, and I had that pain too, I could relate the empathy, the connection. You know, I heard that a lot this weekend. I needed that. I needed to get reconnected. These spiritual retreats reconnect me with the program. It fills me up with spiritual energy. It helps me go on. You know, my batteries are full. But I got that connection. And it's at that connection something happens. And what's in between that connection is a God. You know, when I looked at the program and it said 12-step conscious contact, I thought it was a typo. Isn't that part of the 11th step? And it made me think about it. Really, what's between one addict helping another addict with not expecting nothing in return, and what makes it click? There's that conscious contact in there somewhere. Okay? You know, the 12th step, you know, I was blessed. I was blessed because, you know, early on in the town I lived, when I got there, there was one Narcotics Anonymous meeting. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of people that were controlling everything, you know, and I was an addict that from the time I was picked up to the time I put down, I couldn't stand authority. There really wasn't any leaders, there wasn't any service committee, there was nothing. There was one meeting a week. And what happened was is that just because I didn't have to have any clean time requirements to get involved, I felt that I could get involved. You know, in my town, you know, what we did was is that we had no literature. We had no connection to region. We were renegades. We had no connection to any of the rest. We were disconnected from the fellowship. What it was is all we had was a set of beat-up readings that I think were photocopied twice. Okay? And the program was brought to our town from some addicts from California who moved there temporarily. And then when they moved on, you know, people used it and it fell apart. It was called the High Hopes Group. I liked that. When I got the High Hopes, you know, a couple other acts created this reformed meeting that fell apart many times and started many times. It was called the High Hopes Group, and it was in a little meeting in the back of this church. And when I got to that meeting, I felt at home. Well, what happened was is in rapid succession, four meetings started, you know. And we were really tight-knit, you know. The people, the meetings were small. You could share for 10 minutes about anything you want. And there was no rules here either. You could say the sickest shit you could think of. And then somebody else would top you with even sicker shit. And there was like, you know, and it was a really tight, and now there was problems with that. You know, when you get too tight with people, you get in all their business, and then, you know, we learn about, you know, boundaries and things of that sort, you know, space and... You get too tight. But that's how it was when I got clean. And they let me do stuff. They let me be a secretary. I didn't have no clean time. I had a willingness. They gave me keys to a church. That gave me back my self-esteem that drugs took away. They let me serve. You know? And other neat things happened, you know? Originally, this area was called the Cambria-Somerset Area Narcotics Anonymous. I was privileged to be there when we formed the area. And we didn't do it with people that didn't know. There was people like Lance who came from Pittsburgh that knew something about an area service. There was Sam H. who knew something about, and we decided that this Narcotics Anonymous thing had to grow. We decided that we needed literature. We didn't have any. We needed to get connected to our region. We needed to have a helpline. We needed to have a meeting list. you know? And we got together, and believe you me, if you looked at the resumes of all the people there, we were the biggest screw-ups you could find. But there was a loving God in that, and a desire to carry the message, and a desire to see Narcotics Anonymous grow and help the addict that hasn't even gotten here yet. And it worked. I said it wouldn't work, because I looked at things in a pessimistic, negative way. I said, this can't work. It worked. There's a loving God behind it all. The message. Willingness. See, we're all vessels. I just have to be willing. I'm not a morning person. I sort of resented the committee putting me in the first meeting on Sunday morning, knowing that I'd be up all night. You know? But I'm okay with that. See, the thing is once that spiritual energy starts, I get energy. It fills me up. At the regional spiritual retreat this year, I was sick the night before, and I didn't sleep two winks. But then I got involved in service, carrying a message, promoting our retreat, and I was busy, and I got energy that I didn't even know I had. This is physical stuff. Carrying the message, we do not tire. We get more energy, and we go on when we're doing the right thing. You know, rain doesn't matter. You know, rain feels actually good. It was pretty hot yesterday. You know, without all rain or all sunshine, all you get out of all sunshine is a desert. You know, other things that I want to briefly touch on, you know, before we all get soaking wet, so I'll wrap this up real soon, is, I was, one of the meetings there was a detox before one of the regularly scheduled meetings, and what I would do is I would go in early. And I talked to the patients. And you know, the way that Narcotics Anonymous defines the disease is I didn't know who I was dealing with. See, the other thing is working with a new person, they're scared. You meet them in detox for the first time. You have no idea what their background is. As I said, my first words to them as I say, what are you in for? And they look at me weird. I said, well, what did you use? And no matter what they said, I said, me too. You know why? My drug of choice was yours and more, you know, and then their connection was met, you know, and then I talk about my experience and I talk about why I was there and what I was doing and if all possible, I'd get that person to talk about themselves and then they don't feel alone anymore and then God enters in and then recovery has a chance to start. That's the message, you know, it isn't all. It's that one-on-one level. It's the group level. It's the regional. It's the world level. So, you know, before we all get soaked, I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank the committee for asking me. And that's all I have. Matt and an addict.